Hello, Roman Lazy Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Salvatorian Congregation on the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 5, 2016, or April 5, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Have I Known Where Y'all? Have I known where y'all? Have I known where are departed? I'm the clay. Mold me and make me after thy will. I'm waiting, yielded and still. Have thine own way, oh, have thine own way. Search me and try me, Master, today. Water this snow, oh, wash me just now, as in thy presence, humbly I bow. Have thine own way, oh, have thine own way, wounded and weary, help me, I pray. Power, oh power, surely it's thine, touch me and hear me, Savior divine. Have thine own way, oh, have thine own way. Hold on my being, absolute sway. Fill with thy spirit, till I shall see Joshua only, always revealing. The signs of Yahshua's coming. Matthew 24. Let's start with we're in the book of the Shepherd Rod, Volume 2. We're on page 174. It says, as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world? Yeshua answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and shall deceive many. Ye shall hear of wars, and rumors of wars, and see that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilences, and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Okay, it says, Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations, for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So it says, this gospel of the kingdom. Well, gospel means that Yahweh spelled it out in the law of Moses. So here Yahshua is telling them that this present truth of the kingdom is really what the true meaning of gospel. It means the present truth at the time of the fulfillment of the kingdom of heaven coming down. Then you have the present truth of what they call the good news of the plan of salvation pertaining to who can enter into the kingdom when it comes. So, if you understand the plan of salvation right, then you can enter into the kingdom when it comes. The direct question put to Yahshua and his answer as to the assurance of his second coming and the end of this present world is too plain and self-explanatory to leave room for doubt. He did not say that the end of the present sinful world was not to come, but he plainly stated that it will come. However, he said, before the end shall come, this gospel, good news and present truth of the kingdom, parentheses, the signs of his second coming as foretold in this chapter, shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. And not that all nations shall be converted, but for a witness, and then shall the end come. Those who teach contrary to this plain statement of the Master are they of whom he says, many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. Furthermore, the Yeshua says, for as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Matthew 24:27. While some of these false prophets make a complete denial of his coming, others dare say he has already come. Still others claim that no one shall see him when he comes, but he shall establish his kingdom on the earth, and this world will never come to an end, etc. We ask the question, is Yahshua telling an untrue story, or are these false prophets fulfilling his prediction by trying to deceive the saints concerning his coming and overthrow their faith in the Master's word and thus defraud them of the crown of life? If these are not the deceivers of whom he speaks, then who are they? If such workers of the iniquity dare try to contradict his plain language, as in this instance, may it not be expected that they shall attempt to overthrow the entire truth of the Bible? When Yahshua shall come, as lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, these false prophets shall be ashamed. For the Revelator also declares, behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. That is, he that pierced him shall be resurrected prior to his coming. See Daniel 12:2. And all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him. Even so, amen. Revelation 1:7. Yes, our Yahshua shall come. We shall see him as he is. And it shall be said in that day, lo, this is our Elohim, we have waited for him. No, this is our Savior, Yahshua. We have waited for him, and he will save us. This is the Yahshua. We have waited for him, or we will be glad and rejoice in his salvation. Isaiah 25:9. Though these false prophets and sinners do not want to see him come, they must, and the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captain, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said unto the mountains and the rocks, Fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come. And who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:15-17. And so shall the end come unto the sinners, but not unto Elohim's people. For the Yahshua himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of Yahweh, and the dead in Yahshua shall rise first. And we which are alive and remain shall be called together with them in the clouds to meet the Yahshua in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. To the sinners that day shall be a fearful day, and to them shall he come as a thief in the night, but not so to those who wait for him. For speaking of the great persecution that overtook his people in the dark ages during the 1260 years of Daniel 7:25, he said, Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then there shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other, Matthew 24:29-31. The Master, looking forward to this generation, said, There shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, Luke 21:25. Thus immediately after the tribulation, the great persecution, the sun was to be darkened. On the 19th of May 1780, this prophecy was fulfilled. Okay, it says, quoting from the great controversy, almost if not altogether alone, as the most mysterious and as yet unexplained phenomenon of its kind, stands the dark day of May 19, 1780, a most unaccountable darkness of the whole visible heavens and atmosphere in the New England. An eyewitness living in Massachusetts described the event as follows. In the morning the sun rose clear, but was soon overcast. The clouds became very lowry, and from them black and ominous, as they soon appeared. Lightning flashed, thunder rolled, and a little rain fell. Toward 9 o'clock, the clouds became thinner and assumed a brassy or coppery appearance. And earth, rocks, trees, buildings, water, and persons were changed by this strange, unearthly light. A few minutes later, a heavy black cloud sped over the entire sky, except a narrow rim at the horizon. And it was as dark as it usually is at 9 o'clock on a summer evening. Fear, anxiety, and awe gradually filled the minds of the people. Women stood at the door, looking out upon the dark landscape. Men returned from their labor in the fields. The carpenter left his tools. The blacksmith his forge. The tradesman his counter, schools were dismissed, and tremblingly the children fled homeward. Travelers put up at the nearest farmhouse. What is coming? Queried every lip and heart. It seemed as if a hurricane was about to dash across the land. or as if it was the day of the consummation of all things. For the extent of this darkness was extraordinary. It was observed as far east as Falmouth. To the westward, it reached to the farthest part of Connecticut and to Albany. To the southward, it was observed along the sea coast and to the north as far as American settlements extend. The intense darkness of the day was succeeded an hour or two before the evening by a partially clear sky, and the sun appeared as though it was still obscured by the black, heavy mist. After sundown, the cloud came again overhead, and it grew dark very fast. Nor was the darkness of the night less uncommon and terrifying than that of the day. Notwithstanding, there was almost a full moon. No object was discernible but by the help of some artificial light, which, when seen from the neighboring houses and other places at a distance, appeared through a kind of Egyptian darkness, which seemed almost impervious unto the ray. Said an eyewitness of the scene, "I could not help conceiving at the time that if every luminous body in the universe had been shrouded in impenetrable shade, or struck out of the existence, the darkness could not have been more complete, though at 9 o'clock that night the moon rose to the full. It had not the least effect to dispel the darkness, the death-like shadows. After the midnight, the darkness disappeared, and the moon, when first visible, had the appearance of blood." Now, this was a blood moon. The full moon always comes on the 15th day of any given month. I'm talking about the 15th day of the creation calendar, according to created calendar, not according to the Gregorian calendar, the one that we have on our wall, but according to creation time. The full moon always rises on the 15th day of any given month. May the 19th, 1780, stands in history as the dark day. Since the time of Moses, no period of the darkness of equal density, extent, and duration has ever been recorded. The description of this event, as given by eyewitnesses, is but an echo of the words of Yahweh, recorded by the prophet Joel 2,500 years previous to their fulfillment. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the great and terrible day of the Yeshua come. In 1833, 2 years after Miller began to present in public the evidences of the Yeshua's soon coming, the last of the signs appeared which were promised by the Savior as tokens of his second advent, said the Yeshua. "The stars shall fall from heaven," and John in the Revelation declared, as he beheld and visioned the saying that should herald the day of the, it says God here, we use his sacred name, and the God translates into the Son's name, Yeshua. So I'll read that again. "And John in the Revelation declared, as he beheld in vision the scenes that should herald the day of the Yeshua, the Son. The stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind." This prophecy received a striking and impressive fulfillment in the great meteoric shower of November 13, 1833. That was the most extensive and wonderful display of falling stars which has ever been recorded. the whole firmament over all the United States being then 4 hours in the furriest commotion. No celestial phenomenon has ever occurred in this country since its first settlement, which was viewed with such intense admiration by one class in the community, or with so much dread and alarm by another. Its sublimity and awful beauty still linger in many a mind. Never did rain fall much thicker than the meteors fell toward the earth. East, west, north, and south, it was the same. In a word, the whole heavens seemed in motion. The display, as described in the Professor Stillman's journal, was seen all over North America from 2 o'clock until broad daylight, the sky being perfectly serene and cloudless, an incessant play of the dazzling, brilliant lumicides was kept up in the whole heavens. No language, indeed, can come up to the splendor of that magnificent display. No one who did not witness it can form an adequate conception of its glory. It seemed as if the whole starry heavens had congregated at the one point near the zenith and were simultaneously shooting forth with the velocity of the lightning and every part of the horizon, and yet they were not exhausted. Thousands swiftly followed in the tracks of the thousands, as if created for the occasion. In the New York Journal of Commerce of November 14, 1833, appeared a long article regarding this wonderful phenomenon, containing this statement: "No philosopher or scholar has told or recorded an event, I suppose, like that of yesterday morning. A prophet 1800 years ago foretold it exactly, if we will be at the trouble of understanding the stars falling to mean falling stars, in the only sense in which it is possible to be literally true. Thus was displayed the last of those signs of his coming, concerning that Yahshua bade his disciples, 'When you shall see all these things, know that it is nearer, even at the doors.' After these things, John beheld as the great event next impending, the heavens departing as a scroll, while the earth quaked, mountains and islands removed out of their places, and the wicked in the terror sought to flee from the presence of the Son of Man." Great controversy, 306, 308, and 333, and 334. Yahshua had bidden his people watch for the signs of his advent and rejoice as they should behold the tokens of their coming king. And when these things began to come to pass, he said, "Then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh." Luke 21:28. He pointed his followers to the building, or to the budding trees of the spring, and said, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When its branches yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise, ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near even at the doors." Matthew 24:32-33. While the Savior has clearly pointed out the nearness of his coming to the generation that shall witness all these signs, he has not left us in darkness as to how long it will be from the time of the fulfillment of these signs to that great and glorious event, for he added, this generation, the one that has seen the sign, shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Matthew 24:34. As the generation spoken of by the Master is about to pass away, and the kingdom of the everlasting life ushered in, the searchers of the truth should not neglect his opportunity by the following things of the lesser importance to occupy his mind of time. Okay, we're going to go into our next subtitle. Would be committed to the SDA denomination. Now, for those of you Gentile brethren and sisters, SDA is the acronym for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That keeps the seventh-day Sabbath, which is a spiritual Israel, according to its prophetess, Ellen G. White, as a spiritual Israel of today. For the gospel of the coming of Yahshua and this generation and the signs of the time, as in the Matthew 24, was committed unto the Seventh-day Adventist denomination since 1844. No other body of people has had the burden of the message that is taught in this chapter, the signs of the end of the world, and the urgency of a speedy delivery in this generation. Therefore, whatever commendation or condemnation is written unto the servant in Matthew 24 cannot be applied to another people. Furthermore, as the rest of the Christendom had fallen by 1844 because they rejected the messages that were sent unto them, and thus the Father would not let light shine through them since that time, it is evident that the gospel of the 24th chapter of Matthew, that's talking about 24:14, that should be preached as a witness unto all nations before the coming of our Savior the second time, could not have been preached by any other people. Therefore, the statement concerning the servant in the following verse is applicable only unto the foregoing denomination. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master hath made ruler over his household, to give them to the world meat in due season? Present truth, Matthew 24:45. Note that there is a question as to whom this faithful servant could be, if that people under whom primarily this gospel was committed had been faithful, then the following promise would have been theirs. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. Matthew 24:46-47. For the significance of all his goods is the finishing of the gospel, bringing everlasting righteousness, and ushering in the kingdom of the Messiah. What a wonderful promise, but observe the danger of losing this everlasting glory. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, Matthew 24:48-49, for the servant singular that shall begin to smite his fellow servants, plural, signifies a leadership, one person, the angel of the church of the latest end. So that servant is one person, and he has the title of the angel of the seventh candlestick of the Laodicea, Revelation 3:14-19. Okay, those who have charge of the household, but the servants, plural, apply unto the ministry under that leadership. So you have two servants brought to you in Matthew 24. And in verse 46 and 47. And one is a singular person. And one is more than one person involved there. In other words, you have a main leadership, and then you have a secondary leadership that is preparing and waiting in the wings to emerge at the time when this first leadership's time is up and he is finished. Okay. By the unfaithfulness of that servant, that angel of the seventh candlestick, and it says the gospel has been delayed. The generation is about to pass and their work is years behind. But the result is that the delay has not been expressed by action only, but it is even said by word. My master delayeth his coming. And as one sin leads to another, the doctrine of the health reform, eating foods that have been devitalized by the modern inventions, the dainties of Babylon, etc., indulging fleshly lust, has been largely disregarded, thus fulfilling the words, eat and drink with the drunken. For the doctrine of the health reform is said to be the right hand and arm of the third angel's message by the Seventh-day Adventist, and that the medical work is the right hand of the medical work of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is the right hand of the message. And the idea of a health reform is a thing of the past, so far as the church as a body is concerned. And the leadership cares little, but that is not the worst. This unfaithful servant of Yahweh has even dared stretch his hand over the gulf to form an unlawful alliance of the denominational medical institution with those of the world who are bitterly opposed unto the idea of health reform. Right hand and arm of the third angel's message, the very channel which was instituted to uphold and carry that part of the work is being bound by a confederacy. And now, in order to maintain this alliance, it has been compelled to sacrifice the very principle for which it is organized, thereby Elohim's agency for treating the sick and preventing disease by the healthful living and divine healing through the obedience of the truth has been substituted by the drugs. Thus the devil has cut off the right hand and arm of the third angel's message, and by this cunning device has robbed the Church of the Yahweh of its medical institution. Well, that medical institution, that's the wrong word there. It should say of its healthful institution. What a calamity. What a loss. Would not Elohim's faithful people at such a time as this come up to the help of Yahshua, the Son, against the mighty? How a body of people with so much light can become so blind is beyond the human understanding. It is a mystery. Had they, those who were charged with this great responsibility, been faithful to the trust committed under them, the everlasting blessings found in the following verse would have been theirs. That he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But unto him who neglects his master's commission, the Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he's not aware of, and shall cut him asunder and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Matthew 24:50-51. Had they taken heed unto the last urgent message sent them, calling for the decided changes in these things, the following chapter, Matthew 25, would have been prophetically different. The 10 virgins of Matthew 25. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto 10 virgins, which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps, while the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. Okay, but the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell and buy for yourself. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgins, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, Verily, I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Matthew 25:1-13. Observe that the 25th chapter is a continuation of the 24th. Mark the word. Then, meaning the time they fulfilled the prophetic words contained in Matthew 24:48-51. The virgins are a figure of the house of Israel. In other words, the church. Number 10 has a symbolic meaning of universal, the church as a body. In other words, the seven day Adventist church is this body, and it has branches all over the world. And note that they are all virgins, for the 144,000 are designated by the same word. See Revelation 14:4. The word virgin signify that the class represented by them, 10, are not those who are called out from the Babylon fallen churches at the time the cry is made, for if they were to come out of Babylon by the call, come out of her, my people, Revelation 18:4, they would have been defiled with women, fallen churches, and therefore could not be called virgins. Thus the message of the midnight cry must find them in the house of the Israel, house of Israel, the house of the Yahweh, as virgins. Well, the Gentiles, they need to get used to this type of explanation about this house of the Yahweh, the Father, because those in the Gentile world that are going to be saved and taken to heaven are going to travel with their Hebrew Israelite brethren, because they're going to be joined together into one company of people. And that's in Romans chapter 11. Read about it. Okay. And that's in Ephesians chapter 2 and Romans 11. But the midnight cry was first proclaimed prior unto 1844. And the coming of the bridegroom was Yahshua's coming to the most holy place in the heavenly sanctuary for the investigative judgment of the saints. For the investigation being in two sections, first the judgment for the dead, and second for the living, the cry must be repeated, otherwise we would have no present truth for the time of the judgment of the living. It says the cry for the living being of a greater importance to the world than the one for the dead, and as the virgins are a figure of the living church, the pilgrim must have a direct application unto the church at this present time. The coming of the bridegroom for the judgment of the living, but indirectly it points back to the commencement of the midnight cry. The first angel's message, the judgment for the dead, the messages being of the same event, judgment both for the living and for the dead, are called the midnight cry. The same is proven by the parable itself. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept, and at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. Note that they slumbered and slept before the cry was made. In the summer of 1844, midnight, midway between the time when it was first thought that the 23-year days would end on March 21st and the second day, October 22nd of the same year, this period they applied as being the tarrying time, but marked that the cry had been going on for some years, the message by the miller. So it says, and the tarrying time was applied at its close. And, after they had discovered their miscalculation, that is contrary unto a proper application of the parable, for according unto the parable they tarried before the cry was made. Therefore the tarrying time must be for the judgment of the dead period, before the bridegroom came for the investigation of the living, in which time the ten virgins developed, so that it is the time in which they all slumbered and slept. This application is also in perfect harmony with the message unto the latter sins. See Revelation 3:14-19. And Isaiah 52:1-2. If the foregoing application is correct, and at the end of the tarrying period, or just prior unto the commencement of the judgment of the living, there must be a message cry, and if the virgins are a figure of the church as a body in the time of the cry, then the message must be for the church only. This is also proven in the Great Controversy, page 425. And as much as there is just such a cry presented in the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1, it not only shows that the application of the parable is correct, but also proves that the church is to be the house of Yahweh. They all slumbered and slept. This statement by the Master proves that the house of Israel as a body, the church overall, has been asleep, the seventh day of the church, being in perfect harmony with the previous explanation of the 24th chapter of the Matthew. Five were foolish and five were wise. Number 10 being a symbol of the church as a body, and number 5, and 5 being half and half. The denomination numbers at the present time a little over 300,000. Half of this number would be about 150,000. If we should subtract the dead material, the backsliders, but still on the church record, the number derived after such deduction would be about 144,000. Thus, again, it proves that 144,000 are the five wise virgins, and the foolish ones are they who shall fall under the destroying weapons in the hand of the five men, but the fires took oil in their vessels with their lamps. The oil is a symbol of the Spirit of Yahweh, and the form of a message of truth, for it is the substance that gives the light, the prophetic word of Yahweh. The lamp must be a symbol of the heart into which the word oil is being retained. The trimming of their lamp is the trimming of their hearts. That is, their conscience being aroused, they began to show interest, but only five of them had an extra supply of oil in their vessel. And they started out to meet the bridegroom. The lamps of the foolish ones went out, and as they found themselves in the darkness, it made their progress impossible. Now the question arises, what made their lamps go out? And why could they go backwards, but not forward? As a message of the judgment for the dead was the present truth since 1844, at the beginning of the judgment for the living, when the cry was made, it became present truth no longer. Now, I want to tell you, I know when the judgment of the dead ended and when the judgment of the living began in the house of Israel, the house of Yahweh today. It ended in 2002, the judgment for the dead, and the judgment for the living began in 2003. Consequently, their lamps went out. They could not have moved forward because they were foolish. Let me back up and clarify that statement I just made about the closing of the judgment of the dead and the beginning of the judgment of the living. The closing of the judgment of the dead actually technically fell at the Passover, at the atonement of 2002, which would be the 10th day of the 7th month of the biblical calendar, on the biblical calendar. Creation time, not Gregorian time. So, one period closed, judgment for the dead closed, and judgment of the living began. One would have to understand the book of the seven seals, and so forth, to understand when the dead ended and the living began. Consequently, their lamps went out. They could not move forward because they were foolish. That is, they did not accept the light. The judgment for the living was the oil beyond their reach. The words in the parable prove that they all heard the cry, arose and trimmed their lamps. Five of them failed to get the supply of oil because they were foolish. They did not study for themselves, allowed others to think for them. They chose the easy, popular side and accepted the decisions of the leaders, copied the mistakes of others, and were thus left without a supply of oil, robbed of the truth, cheated of glory, and left in darkness. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. At last, the foolish virgin saw themselves in darkness. Then they went to the wise and asked for the oil as a gift. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go ye rather unto them that sell and buy for yourselves. The oil is sold, and there must be something given in exchange for the obtaining of the supply. For the price they had to pay was so high, was to sigh and cry for the abominations done in the midst of the house of Israel, the house in which they were members of. That would be the spiritual Seventh-day Adventist Israel of today. Give up sin and obey the truth. Their receipt for the value of the exchange would have been the seal of the living Elohim in their foreheads. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with them to the marriage, and the door was shut Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. As a foolish virgin at last came to the door, it is evident that they obtained the oil, learned of the message, but there had been a delay. The door was shut, and they were left out. Now, why were they unconcerned at first and very zealous at last? The experience in this instance is about the same as that of the deluge. While Noah preached the coming of the flood, and the world, for the world paid little attention unto his message, but those who believed went into the ark at a given time, and the door was closed. But not long after, signs of the Noah's prediction appeared, and as drops of rain began to fall, the wicked multitude became alarmed and rushed for the ark. But the door was closed, and they were left out. The door that was shut is a symbol showing that probation for the church had closed just shortly after the foolish virgins became alarmed. So the probation for the Seventh-day Adventist has a closing time here in the last parabolic hour of Earth's time. And that's the 12th hour. And that's the hour that we're in now. At last, they were willing to pay the price and buy the oil, but it was not a change of heart, only the fear of losing out. Their course of the action had left them without the seal. The man with the rider's acorn had passed them by. What a terrible mistake, what a disappointment, almost saved but entirely lost. The coming of Yeshua as our high priest into the most holy place for the cleansing of the sanctuary brought to you in Daniel 8:14. The coming of the Son of Man unto the Ancient of Days as presented in Daniel 7:13. And the coming of Yeshua unto his temple foretold by the Malachi are descriptions of the same event. And this is also represented by the coming of the bridegroom to the marriage described by Yeshua in the parable of the 10 virgins, Matthew 25. Read that in A Great Controversy by Ellen G. White, The Prophetess of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, page 426. The description by Daniel applies to the commencement of the judgment for the dead, but one by Malachi 3:1-3 is applicable unto the judgment for the living, all the same event of the atonement cleansing of the sanctuary. For the coming of the bridegroom here brought to view takes place before the marriage. The marriage represents the reception by Yeshua of his kingdom. The holy city, the new Jerusalem, which is the capital and representative of the kingdom, is called the bride, the Lamb's wife. Said the angel unto John, Come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. He carried me away in the spirit, says the prophet, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from the Yahweh. Clearly then, the bride represents the holy city, and the virgins that go out to meet the bridegroom are a symbol of the laity congregation of the church. In the Revelation, the people of the Yahweh are said to be the guests at the marriage supper. If guests, they cannot be represented also as the bride. Well, the guests are the laity, but the bride is your leadership. Yeshua, as stated by the prophet Daniel, will receive from the Ancient of Days in heaven dominion and glory and a kingdom. He will receive the new Jerusalem, the capital of his kingdom, prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. Having received the kingdom, he will come in his glory as King of Kings, Yeshua of the Sovereign of Sovereigns, for the redemption of his people, who are to sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob at his table in the kingdom to partake of the marriage supper of the Lamb. And Matthew 8, 11 and 12, and also the Great Controversy, page 426 and 427. The virgins were called to meet him, and thus by the faith go in with him to appear before the Father, the great judge. The seal is the permit. It places their names in the Lamb's Book of Life, and thus it grants unto them the right to appear before the Father in the judgment, not in the person, but in figure, thus having their sins blotted out, Matthew 24, 36, 50, are descriptions of the same event. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh, Matthew 25:13. This has reference to the time of the judgment, and not of his coming unto the earth. For the saints shall know the day and the hour of the Yeshua's coming in the clouds to receive the redeemed, and it shall be announced by the Father shortly before his coming. See the Great Controversy, page 640, by the Ellen G. White. Summary of the Ten Virgins. The number 10 being a symbol of universal, it represents the church as a body prior to the commencement of the judgment of the living. And the sealing period of 144,000, and before the loud cry of the third angel's message, being the period of the first fruits of the harvest, the five wise virgins, they who trusted in Elohim and his word only, having no confidence in man, and were hungry for the truth, searching for the light, and gladly accepting it when it came, thus they received the seal of Elohim's approval, their sins were blotted out, and their lives made sure. They passed from condemnation and death into glory and life eternal. They are Elohim's servants, kings, and priests, 144,000 in number. The five foolish virgins are they who had confidence in men. They were willing that others should think and study for them. Their love for the world and the things of it exceeded their love for the Yeshua and the world to come. They had no true sense of the awful results of sin. Their zeal for self drowned their zeal for the house of Yahweh and his honor. They were satisfied with their lamps trimmed, but with little oil in them. They saw no necessity for more light, that is, prophets or the truth or message. They said in their hearts, "We are rich and increasing goods and have need of nothing." They were prejudiced against the light upon the word of Elohim, and accepted not the truth because the channel through which it came was not of their choice. The knowledge of the present truth, which the five foolish virgins possessed since 1844, is the judgment of the dead, and was the only oil in their lamps. When the judgment of the living commenced and the cry was made, they were found without this extra oil in their vessels. They had neglected their Yeshua's command. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh. Thus, when the wise ones started out to meet the bridegroom, the lamps of the foolish went out, for the judgment of the dead had passed. Therefore, it was present truth no more. And thus they were left in darkness at the beginning of the judgments of the Yahweh. They saw their mistake and rushed for the ark of safety, but it was beyond their reach, for they knew nothing of the message. And by the time they acquired it, filled their lamps with oil, there had been a delay. The angel had passed through the city, through Jerusalem, that's the Seventh-day Adventist Church, had gone completely through it. And that period of time was from 1844 to 2002, a 158-year period of time. Actually, it's to 2003. So it says the church, the ceiling was finished and probation for the church had closed. The door was shut, thus they were left out. Then they came with these words, "Yahweh, Yahweh, Master, Master, open unto us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." appoint his portion with the hypocrites, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What a disappointment that will be. It will be noticed that the close of probation for the church and the one for the world are two different events. The former is a miniature representation of the latter, the scripture, for the proceeding is one is found in Matthew 25:11-12, but of the final one we read, he that is unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still, and he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still, and behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according unto his work shall be, Revelation 22:11-12. At this time, those who were like the foolish, five foolish virgins will say, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from the north even to the east. They shall run to and fro to seek the word of Yahweh, and shall not find it. Amos 8:12. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. If number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close this now, service with a song. The Pearly White City. There's a holy and beautiful city. Whose built and ruler is Yah. Sound saw it descending from heaven. And Patmos in exile he trod. His high massive wall is of jasper. The city itself is pure of gold. And when my throat in his folded, now I shall its glory behold. In that bright city, holy white city, I have a mansion, a harp, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting, and longing for the white city council coming down. No sin is allowed in that city, and nothing defiling nor mean. No pain and no sickness can enter. No crape on the doorknob is seen. Her sorrows and cares are forgotten. No tempter is there to annoy. No parting words ever are spoken. There's nothing to hurt and destroy. In the bright city, holy white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting, and longing for the white city council coming down. No heartaches are known in that city, no tears ever moisten the heart. There's no disappointment in heaven, no envy and strife in the sky. The saints are all sanctified holy, they live in sweet harmony there. My heart is now set on that city, and someday its blessings I'll share. In that bright city, holy white city. city of Machan, the heart and the crown. Now I'm watching, waiting and longing for the white city I saw coming down. My loved ones are gathering yonder, my friends too are passing away, and soon I shall join their bright number and live in eternity's day. They're safe now in glory with Yahshua. Their trials and battles are past. They overcome sin and the tempter. They've reset their city at last. In that bright city, holy white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting, and longing for the white city that's all coming down.